This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Paul, Fiona and Izzy here on Joy 94.9 Saturday Magazine. It is about 18 minutes to midday here on this Easter Saturday, Fiona.
I know. It's going to be a beautiful weekend. We're actually just waiting for our next guest, so we're just going to have a little chat while we're waiting.
Wasn't Angela amazing?
Angela was amazing.
Phenomenal. Yeah. First time in the Joy Studios, and a lot going on at Transgender Victoria. It looks like they are really trying to ramp up the workload ready for August and November.
Yes, and there's plenty to do indeed in that area. So while we're waiting for our next guest, I think that we should probably remind people that Word for Word this afternoon is
Justine Della Riva.
Justine Della Riva.
And Justine Della Riva is the person who runs basically the Victorian Pride Centre. They're the chief exec here, and they do an amazing job looking after, I think, Isabel, it's 22 organisations that are here in the building. Oh, sorry. Let's switch you on. There you go.
That's all right. I believe so. Yeah, she's a very, very busy person, Justine. You see her constantly running around the Vic Pride Centre. Very busy, but a big job, and she does a great job.
So as a newbie to the VPC, what do you think of working in a building like this?
I think it's absolutely incredible. I actually used to study here downstairs when I lived around the corner, and I've always loved this building. But working here, it's got such a good feel, all the different Pride organisations that are around. There's a real sense of community.
It's got a buzz, hasn't it?
It does. It's a great place to work.
I can just see popped up on my screen. Our next guest is on the line. So I'm going to allow you, Fiona, to introduce our next guest, Emily.
Fantastic. Emily Dye is Marketing and Research Analysis for the Intergenerational Program at the Centre for Independent Studies. Welcome to the program, Emily.
Thanks for having me. It's good to be here.
Now, you have a new report that's come out, which is that a common fact, I think most people understand, that housing is becoming a pipe dream for many Australians. But while it might be a common fact, what people may not know about is all of the various elements that are made up, that make up this issue, and it's intergenerational equality. Can you run us through the report and the study and give us an overview of what you've discovered?
Yeah, absolutely. This is probably the biggest issue that's impacting young people right now. Just the ability to start building wealth, getting a home is kind of that first rung on the ladder. And a lot of people are just feeling locked out of the property market. And we can see that in the numbers. You've got when boomers are, it was 43% of 25 to 29-year-olds 20 years ago were able to buy a house. Now it's 36%, and that trend is getting even worse for the next generation, for Gen Z. For boomers, it took about 2 years for a household to save up enough for a 20% deposit. Now for millennials, 5.5 years, and the numbers are looking even worse again for Gen Z. And it's a case of there's just not enough housing to go around. We're not building where we need to build. We're not building, when we are building, we're building out. We're not putting the houses where, like in the locations that people are actually demanding those houses to be. There's a preference towards single family homes instead of building up, taking advantage of the space we have. And 78% of the area around Sydney is actually zoned for single family, which seems like a bit of a waste of space when a lot of people would like to live near the city but can't.
Absolutely. I mean, there is, you certainly mentioned in your report things like NIMBYism, to prefer to, preserve characters of communities. But there is also, of course, a new movement called YIMBYism, or YIMBYs, which is yes in my backyard, because we know that the facilities and the communities and the public transport and the access to services is far greater in the inner urban, let's not say inner city, but in the inner urban established communities. So what, I mean, does your report, address the issues of, what's the holdup in being able to build more medium density housing in the city areas and the suburbs that are well established.
Yeah, the incentives just aren't there for people that are already established in a suburb. They're the people that get the vote. It's not the people that are coming into those suburbs that get the vote. So in general, they don't want their property prices to go down. They fear that development, big buildings in their suburbs could decrease their property values. They like the way things were, and they're the people that get to vote. They're the people that are influencing councils. They're the people that are going to those council meetings. So it's been really good to see the YIMBY movement come up and have a real influence. It's primarily driven by young people that are like, hey, we've been locked out. We want to see development in our neighborhoods. We want to see progress. We want to live in neighborhoods that have access to all of these resources. The idea that you can have a coffee shop down the road, that you don't have to drive a long distance to get somewhere. They're like, yeah, this idea of higher density actually is a good idea, and kind of pushing back against that. Because for a very long time, those people outside the suburb haven't had an opportunity to speak.
And I, it's definitely, you know, the generational divide is remarkable. I mean, my mother says to me, wouldn't it be nice, dear, if you could own a house? And I'm like, well, Mom, I don't know if you've just noticed what's going on here, but it's very nice that you would like me to own a house. But, you know, we do know that the millennials are now the largest voting bloc. So we would imagine that there's going to be some change. It's got to be happening soonish. There's got to be a push from that generation to increase pressure on governments and local councils and state governments to sort of change the planning laws so that, you know, there can be greater ease to build more in these areas. What did your report say about some of those components?
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, this is something that my colleague, Matt Taylor, looked into with a report, Generation Left, on how younger generations are actually shifting further to the left. And while I think that's generally obviously the case with more social issues, when it comes to economic policy, I think it's really whoever can present the best case for how do we fix this problem? How do we get more housing? Who are you appealing to? And I think a lot of the parties could do very well by fixing this housing problem. It is the number one issue that is going to be affecting young people. Young people, yes, we do care about a lot of social issues. We care about the climate. But really, when it comes down to it, we also care a lot about cost of living. We want to have a roof over our head. And the real practical things are what's going to impact our vote probably more than anything.
Now, in your report that I'm looking at, you have a couple of key things that is key steps to how we can make housing more affordable. Can you run through those key points for us?
Yeah, I'd like to see zoning relaxed in many ways, and state governments really need to be incentivizing councils to build more. Some options could be quotas for councils to have a certain amount of development, restricting taking high density down to low density. That's the wrong direction. We want low density to be going to high density, and we need to be taking away some of that power that councils have to restrict and slow down the process, because it's not just denying an application, it's also delaying an application for a company to build. That costs money. Time is money in this industry. And with interest rates changing, with construction costs going up, sometimes a plan that was viable 5 years ago, but through a delayed planning process, finally gets approved, but is no longer financially viable. So we need to make sure that those processes are quick, are simple, and are more towards that increasing development and not towards keeping things the same. We need to be restricting the amount of heritage. There's a lot of this idea that we have to keep full suburbs as relics of the past. They become a museum to a specific era. And I don't think that's the way forward for Sydney. That leaves a small minority of people in the in and a lot of people on the out.
That's exactly right. As beautiful, you know, there's got to be a way where it could actually just be more effectively used. Heritage is, you know, we don't necessarily see the changing the city streetscapes change, but by the same token, we're getting to a crisis point, and there's got to be a way where we can. There's got to be more give and take. I know that there's a move in Victoria to remove councils from the planning process, to streamline planning, to cut red tape, and also to reduce those heritage have a greater level of oversight over those heritage concerns.
Yeah, because heritage is important, but it's a question of, are we saving a single house that is of historical significance, a certain piece of architecture? That's one thing. But then when it's like power substations, maybe not, or entire suburbs, I think then we get a problem.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. And I think that, you know, if you speak to any architect or any urban, you know, architecture firm, they're going to be also going to be looking for these kinds of changes, because it makes their lives are just, I believe, from my understanding of the sector, is that they're held up to a great extent by some of these extensive planning laws.
Oh, 100%. We're restricting their creativity.
And then also, I guess the other issue is that you don't want to relax things to the point that then we have, because we have seen shoddy, bad build practices, etc. So it's a fine balancing act. And how do you see that it's going to, like, what are the steps, do you think, to achieving some of these goals?
Yeah, I think it's really giving a voice to those people that aren't necessarily in the community at the time. So having, I do like the idea of opening things up to the state, because there's a lot of people in New South Wales that can't break into certain neighborhoods, and those neighborhoods really have a chokehold on the council. They're the only people that get the vote. So
yes.
They want to keep things the same, and we absolutely need to be sure that our regulations and is around safety, is around good building processes. I think a lot of times it's gone overboard to the point of being, we're stopping change at all.
Okay. Emily, thank you. I really appreciate your time today on Saturday. And thank you for sharing with us the details of your report. If people want to find your report, where do they go to see it and read it?
Yeah, they can go on the CIS website, cis.org.au.
Fantastic. And Emily's report is Housing is Becoming a Pipe Dream for Many Australians. It's a really great read. Thanks, Emily. We really appreciate your time, and have a fantastic weekend.
Thank you so much. You too.
You're on Saturday Magazine with Paul, Isabel and Fiona. We are coming towards the end of the show. We'll be back in a minute.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.